This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Sleep. Sleep. I finally got enough to be able to speak coherently into a microphone. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Today, I'll discuss Cinderella stories. What are the key parts of a Cinderella story? Why are there so many of them? And what's the earliest Cinderella story we know of? We'll answer all of those burning questions in a moment. But first, I have a letter to read. It's from listener Liz, and she says, "Just finished listening to the episode about Hatchet, and now I'm wondering how many of us aren't getting enough vitamins, even though we live in civilization. I definitely want to give this book to my daughter to read, but I also wonder if you can recommend any survival stories that have a girl as the main character." Thanks for writing in, Liz. And since a lot of people start off January determined to treat themselves a little better, I think it's healthy to consider if we're getting the nutrients we need. There are definitely a lot of things to eat which are tasty, but don't really do anything to help us. As far as a survival story about a girl, check out Island of the Blue Dolphins by Scott Odell. I love this story, and we'll be talking about it soon. In fact, if you want to find out about new episodes right away and learn which books I'll be discussing soon, come find me on Instagram at Children's Literature Podcast. That's all one word. Children's Literature Podcast. Cinderella stories are found in every human culture throughout time. There's a lot of variation, but it usually goes like this. A vulnerable, friendless, impoverished young woman is trapped in an abusive home. Her closest living relatives do nothing to help her. In fact, they are her abusers. She works from dawn to dusk without pay or thanks, while the others live in comfort and luxury. But one day, an amazing thing happens. Through magic or luck, the girl manages to enter the realm of the wealthy and powerful, and her goodness and beauty radiate so clearly that everyone who sees her is amazed. The magic will only work briefly, but it's enough time to escape for just one night of fun. Unexpectedly, she meets a prince, and they fall deeply in love with one another. But she has to run away before the magic fades, returning her to her life of drudgery. She leaves behind a clue to her identity, usually a shoe. Unwilling to lose her, the prince seeks her out, and she is rescued from misery. She marries the prince, saving her forever from abuse and poverty. Her tormentors are punished or forgiven, and she lives happily for the rest of her days. And that's it. This story has been retold a million times. But why? It's because all over the world, throughout history, women have been vulnerable to those in power over them. It makes sense that those women would then tell fantasy stories about escaping lives of abuse and drudgery to gain a position of power and respect. It's also satisfying to imagine one's abusers getting what they deserve. The best-known version of Cinderella today is the one by Charles Perrault. This is the one that inspired the Disney movie and tells the story of a girl who is abused by her stepmother and stepsisters. She's transformed by a fairy godmother to get to a ball where a prince falls in love with her. She loses a shoe while fleeing the party before the magic wears off, but the prince then uses this shoe to find her, rescue her, and marry her. The stepsisters are forgiven and given good husbands. The second best-known one is that written down by the Brothers Grimm. In this version, there's no fairy godmother. The ghost of Cinderella's mother helps her in the form of a white dove, and her father is more directly guilty of mistreating her. Unlike the Perrault story, the stepsisters are not forgiven. They get their eyes pecked out by angry birds when they crash Cinderella's wedding. You can see that just from the two best-known Cinderella tales, there's a lot of variation going on, and every culture has its own version. Yet despite being an important part of folklore, Cinderella stories are often put down as shallow tales about some girl just wanting to be the prom queen. I'd like to refute that. These stories have a lot more to do with economics and human rights than mere fashion. Cinderella stories are about a girl with no money, no property, and no power. These stories point out that a girl in that position is completely invisible to society. She's vulnerable to her abusers and can't escape a bad guardian without help or luck or both. But once she gets her chance, once she finally gets that hand up, it's her own virtue, her own value that shines through. That was up to her. She impresses the prince with her personality, her grace, and her good manners. All she needed was that boost up to be seen as a real human being. In the modern world, we have laws that protect children and social workers whose only job is to look into abusive situations. But this is a pretty recent thing in human history. In many places in the world, things are as they have been for thousands of years when it comes to the rights of women and girls. This is why Cinderella stories are almost never about boys or men. In pre-modern societies, and modern societies that don't live up to modern ideals, boys and men simply have more options. If a young man is from present-day Afghanistan or medieval France, he can leave the house whenever he wants and go get a job. But unless a girl lives in a fully modern society with strong legal protections for women, it's not safe, and sometimes even illegal, for her to try to improve her situation on her own. This is what makes the stepmother so vile. As a woman, she knows exactly what she is doing, and her cruelty is directly contrasted with the kindness of the fairy godmother. Cinderella's life can be horrible or wonderful, depending on whether or not the women in her life care to help her or hurt her. In a society that oppresses and exploits women, Cinderella needs a benefactor to help her find a long-term protector. That's where the wealthy and virtuous husband comes in. Given the patterns of history, it's more likely to be a young woman who is trapped without money, friends, or power, without any means of escaping an abusive home, other than a good marriage. It's really hard for modern-day people to understand this, which is why so many recent Cinderella adaptations take the "I don't need no man in my life to be happy" point of view. And lots of them are good. I just get a bit annoyed, though, when criticisms of Cinderella stories fail to take into account the realities of being a woman in a society designed to keep her subservient. When Cinderella accepts the help of a fairy godmother and then manages to marry royalty, she's not being shallow or helpless. She's wisely figuring out how to win a social, economic, and romantic game that was designed for her to lose. Most Cinderellas are female, but sometimes the story can be about a man. The best one I can think of is the 1979 film Rocky. Yes, Rocky is a Cinderella story. You have a main character who has no money, no friends, and no clear way to improve his situation. He has a horrible boss who makes him do terrible things, and his boss's henchman openly mocks and belittles him. Rocky's girlfriend Adrian is also a Cinderella, slaving away to keep house for her horrible, abusive brother Polly. But then the king of all the boxers, heavyweight champ Apollo Creed, invites Rocky to fight him. This is Rocky's one chance to go to the ball, to prove to himself and the world that he has value. His fairy godmother is the cranky old boxing coach Mickey. He undergoes a transformation that is the opposite of magic. Just a lot of hard work getting up early, drinking raw eggs, punching sides of beef, and a whole lot of cardio. But it's a transformation all the same. And he does get a nice yellow silk robe to wear to the big dance. Rocky makes it through all 15 rounds of the fight. in which both he and Apollo give it their all. Exhausted and injured, they both walk away with what they want. Apollo was truly challenged and remained the champ, if only barely. Rocky got what he wanted. He's shown himself and the world that he can go the distance, and he and Adrian call out each other's names and declare their love for one another. And there it is, a classic Cinderella story. The only thing that's missing is something to do with a shoe. The script is even explicit about the connection. When Rocky enters the ring, one of the reporters in the film calls the event a Cinderella story. Cinderella stories are everywhere, and you'll spot them now that you know what to look for. There are dozens of movies, from a very funny one done in the Soviet Union in 1947 to the 90s girl power classic Ever After. But how old are Cinderella stories? I suspect that Cinderella may be one of the oldest story patterns of all, because everyone can relate to wanting to escape from cruelty and injustice, and we all want to be respected and to be safe from bullies and poverty. The earliest recorded Cinderella-type story was written by Strabo, a Greek philosopher, historian, and geographer who lived about 2,000 years ago. He wrote his most significant works during the reign of the Roman Emperor Augustus. In his book titled Geography, Strabo described the physical characteristics of the Earth, noting correctly that it is round, and gave a history of how the field of geography developed before describing as much of the world as the Romans were aware of at the time. When Strabo describes Egypt, he of course mentions the three massive pyramids at Giza. They were as much of a tourist attraction back then as they are today, and this was what ancient Roman visitors were told about their origin. The 1932 translation of Strabo by H.L. Jones reads, "Now these pyramids are near one another and on the same level. But farther on, at a greater height of the hill, is the third, which is much smaller than the two, though constructed at much greater expense. For from the foundations almost to the middle, it is made of black stone, the stone from which mortars are made, being brought from a great distance. For it is brought from the mountains of Ethiopia. And because of its being hard and difficult to work into shape, it rendered the undertaking very expensive. It is called Tomb of the Courtesan, having been built by her lovers. The courtesan whom Sappho, the Melic poetess, calls Dorica, the beloved of Sappho's brother Caraxes, who was engaged in transporting wine from Lesbos to Naukratis for sale. But others gave her the name Rhodopis. They tell the fabulous story that when she was bathing, an eagle snatched one of her sandals from her maid and carried it to Memphis. And while the king was administering justice in the open air, the eagle, when it arrived above his head, flung the sandal into his lap. And the king, stirred both by the beautiful shape of the sandal and the strangeness of the occurrence, sent men in all directions into the country in quest of the woman who wore the sandal. And when she was found in the city of Naukratis, she was brought up to Memphis, became the wife of the king, and when she died, was honored with the above-mentioned tomb." Modern archaeologists now believe that the smallest of the pyramids at Giza is almost certainly the tomb of the pharaoh Menkaure, who lived about 4,500 years ago. That's almost 2,000 years before the time that Rhodopis was said to have lived. But that phony story told to ancient tourists is more romantic. The wild thing about Rhodopis is that she might even have been a real person. Like most people who lived in the messy space between legend and history, accounts of Rhodopis are inconsistent. Sometimes she was conflated with other women, something that even ancient Greek writers would complain about. Some said she was a fellow slave with Aesop, and one writer said the two had a secret affair. Greek writers also said that the brother of the poet Sappho fell in love with her and purchased her freedom. It would be technically possible for a person to know both Aesop and Sappho, as they were alive at the same time, but I think it's more likely that the truth has been stretched to add to the fame of Rhodopis. Sappho did write a nasty poem to her brother rebuking him for spending so much cash on someone called Rhodopis, though, so who knows? If a hard-working girl finished hauling a load of wine across the Mediterranean, decided to have a nice bath to relax, got her shoe stolen by an eagle, and ended up queen of Egypt, good for her. Cinderella stories are important because they are universal. They speak instantly and timelessly to anyone who has had a horrible boss or felt trapped in a bad situation. They offer hope that one day, with a little luck and maybe a little help, other people will see that you're not worthless. In fact, you're pretty awesome, and those jerks are going to live to regret how they treated you. As an activity for students, nothing could be better than to add to the long human tradition of writing new versions of the Cinderella legend. I've created a worksheet you can print that will help students come up with a story that has all the required ingredients: a main character that is socially, economically, and physically trapped by a cruel oppressor. Cinderella is tormented by those with power over her, or him, and longs for a means of escape. A literally or metaphorically magical moment comes along, and a benefactor helps Cinderella get to an event that could change her life. After being transformed and impressing everyone at the event, including a powerful ruler, Cinderella has to flee in order to avoid being found out. But in the end, she's able to escape her life of drudgery and misery when a powerful rescuer, impressed by her good qualities, seeks her out. The tormentors are punished or forgiven, and Cinderella is safe forever in a new life of wealth, love, and respect. This basic framework can be reinterpreted in any way possible, and I'd love to hear from any of you about what you or your students come up with. I've written my own Cinderella story. A few weeks ago, I was digging around in an old box of papers and found a copy of a story I wrote when I was about 10 years old for a contest hosted by Knott's Berry Farm in California. They asked school kids to write stories and chose some of them to be performed by their acting company at the theme park. I wrote a little story about a gal called Cindy and how she had a horrible stepma and stepsisters. Her fairy cowpoke came along and transformed her old work boots into shiny rhinestone boots so she could go to a hoedown, where she met Daryl Charming and fell in love. I thought it might be fun to come back to this idea, and the result is Cindy Feller, an Old West fairy tale. I had a lot of fun writing it, and my 7-year-old daughter helped me enough that I feel she deserves credit as a co-author. Kids make very good writing coaches, because they will absolutely tell you if your story isn't any good, and they keep the pressure on you to finish your work so they can find out how it all ends. An audiobook of Cindy Feller will be next up on the podcast, and I hope you all enjoy it. In the meantime, get cracking on your own version of Cinderella, and send me a copy. I'd love to read it. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.